From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. We're going to continue now with our series on aging jazz musicians. Yesterday, we heard about the challenges many players face as they get older. They find gigs hard to come by, many have no health insurance or Medicare because they were paid in cash, and many didn't save for retirement. Today, NPR's Felix Contreras tells us about what some organizations are doing to help.
When the music ends and the audience leaves, many elderly jazz musicians go home to empty apartments, anxiety, and often hunger.
I've seen the majority of my dad friends live and die poor.
Organist Nathan Lucas grew up with jazz and jazz musicians. His father is 94-year-old tenor saxophonist Max Lucas. Every week they play together at Harlem's famed Lenox Lounge. And Nathan says many of his father's friends come out to play when they should be home in bed.
They play from gig to gig, and they survive like that. Even when they're not able to really get around and function the way they should, they'll still be out because they have to make that whatever it is they make that night. When we're sick, we don't work, and that means that we don't pay bills and we don't eat.
Unfortunately, they don't talk about it either. That makes the job of helping them harder.
I won't say any names, that's all. Jazz Foundation, can I help you?
On a rainy morning in a cramped office not far from Times Square, Wendy Oxenhorn is working the phones. She's the executive director of the Jazz Foundation of America. Mm-hmm. It's a nonprofit based in New York that offers pro bono services to elderly jazz and blues musicians. On this day, Oxenhorn is making sure that one musician is able to pay his rent, that another is getting needed medication, and making sure a third is showing up for his AA meetings.
No, I understand, but do you think he's going to show up? You think he's all right, or you think he's battling? Is he making meetings?
The Jazz Foundation was founded in 1989 and helped 35 musicians that year. Now it helps an average of 35 musicians a month. Valerie Simon is a social worker for the Jazz Foundation and says it often takes more than one phone call to get an honest assessment of a musician's situation.
Because of pride issues, you know, one phone call, I'm fine, I don't need anything, I'm just fine, who gave you my number, kind of situation. And then upon speaking a couple more times to admit that, you know, they're a few months behind on the rent, they're, you know, what little money fixed income they have coming in isn't even covering what they have to pay every month. And that, you know, sometimes there are people who are struggling to have a meal, a full meal every day.
Let alone health care. Many jazz musicians and their families, like other working poor, get their health care from visits to the emergency room. But there is a small informal network of medical professionals around the country who treat musicians for free or at reduced rates, and they help elderly performers navigate the complex world of self-pay insurance. Their names get spread among musicians by word of mouth. They are jazz fans who are doctors, dentists, surgeons, even administrators, like Bob Sancho. He is a vice president at the Bronx Lebanon Hospital Center in New York.
There was one musician called me up and said, listen, I have a young boy. He's 10 years old, and he's been vomiting blood. And I said, how long? He says, oh, many, many weeks now. And I said, gee, you should have came in here a lot sooner. They were embarrassed because they had no medical coverage, and they didn't want to ask for a handout.
Sancho says the hospital was able to help the little boy, but the administrator also says he has to balance the financial problems of musicians against the hospital's bottom line.
Many of the doctors here, for example, know, I may call them up and say, look, so-and-so has this, he has no medical coverage. And they say, bring him in anyway. I look at him, and they do us the favor because they have their hearts in the right place. And we can't do that on an everyday basis because the hospital would go under financially, but certainly we can't turn away anybody that would go into deeper illness if we turn them away.
Another organization that is supposed to help musicians is their union, the American Federation of Musicians. But organist Nathan Lucas echoes the sentiments of many jazz musicians in New York who say the union pays more attention to Broadway and classical musicians than it does to jazz players.
They cater to Broadway. They really don't cater to the musicians, the club musicians. And you pay your dues, and they give you a book, and they send you some junk mail every now and then. I've pretty much given up on a union.
So apparently have a lot of others. In a survey of 53,000 jazz musicians around the country, conducted last year by the National Endowment for the Arts and Columbia University, only 30% said they belonged to the union. The mistrust runs deep. Many older musicians recall a Jim Crow union with two pay scales, one for black jazz musicians, and another more lucrative pay rate for mostly white players. Veteran bass player Bob Cranshaw has been a member of the union since the late 1950s, but even he was skeptical when the American Federation of Musicians proposed approaching smaller jazz clubs about paying union scale. Cranshaw was worried the clubs would blackball the musicians who asked for higher pay and pension and health care deductions.
I mean, I don't want you to go into a club and speak in my behalf, and I end up not being able to go back to the club because I've sent the union in there.
Because of the musicians' concerns, the proposal was never adopted, but Bob Cranshaw still believes the union can help. Club owners say they don't make enough money to pay higher rates or deductions for pensions and health care. Ron Sturm co-owns Iridium, one of New York's best-known jazz clubs.
I don't know if the audience, there's enough audience out there that we could pass it along, basically, in cover charges. I think right where we are now is about as much as we should be charging for cover charges in this current market.
A plan that would not increase club owners' costs emerged in late January. Union reps, club owners, musicians, and New York State legislators met to draft a law. It would allow jazz clubs to do what Broadway theaters already do: redirect an existing tax on tickets into a union pension fund. But this would only apply to clubs that sell tickets. The policy at most small jazz clubs is still cash at the door and cash to the musicians. State lawmakers are still considering the plan. There is another program that offers something in addition to financial support: the emotional boost of just getting a chance to play. The Jazzmobile was founded by Dr. Billy Taylor in 1964.
I remember at one point when Roy Eldridge had suffered physically and couldn't play those high notes and do what he used to do. But other people at Jazzmobile said, well, you know, he's a guy that we love. I mean, we can't let him be just sort of sitting home and waste himself away, you know. And so Jazzmobile was able to give him some gigs. And it wasn't that he needed it. He didn't need the money. But it helped him to get out with young kids and talk to them, realize that they respected him and that he was someone worth listening to and so forth. Made all the difference in the world for him and at that point in his life, you know. Too many musicians didn't get that.
Tomorrow, one elusive source of revenue for elderly jazz musicians: royalties from reissues of their classic recordings. Felix Contreras, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.